Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hello and welcome to this. It is the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. I'm JB and I'm very tired after watching a whole weekend of rugby. What have you watched, 26 different games, Phil?
At least. It must be that many.
Goodness me, I've watched a lot. It's all sort of blurred into one, though.
Yeah, from Thursday night as well. Thursday, Friday, three games yesterday, three games today. Some amazing games as well. The games that I was expecting to be amazing, well, certainly one of them, Ireland v Scotland, wasn't amazing.
No, it wasn't, was it?
And some of the games, it's amazing if you're an Ireland fan, some of the games that I was not particularly expecting to be amazing were like the game that we have just watched. This is 10 p.m, just after 10 p.m. on Sunday evening. What a game we have just witnessed.
Yeah, absolutely incredible. We don't have Tim Cocker. We don't know where he is.
He's dialing in at some point.
So we'll just stand by and Tim Cocker will join us. Now, have you been watching Tim's YouTube videos?
I've not seen any. I've been kind of out of action for most of the last 2 weeks.
Well, I've watched all of them because they're excellent, and I encourage everybody else to go and do so also. However, there's one video which is suspiciously missing. Well, you know Tim is driving around in this Ford.
Yes, right? His camper van.
You'd have thought Ford would want to let, you know, in order to lend a top-rate broadcaster a camper van, at least a video of him in the camper van, right? Would you not think?
Yes, probably.
And why do you think he's not done that? Do you think it's because it's... Do you think he's just decided not to do it because the camper van's too full of, like, empty bottles of Cristal and party drugs?
Or just whole wheels of cheese. Which do you think he'd be more ashamed of?
I don't know. That's a good question. What would I be... Cheese, I think. Yeah,
you would be more... You right now would be much more ashamed of the cheese and baguettes.
Oh, my God. Imagine people seeing my, simple carbohydrates. Processed white bread. Ugh. Ugh. So, yeah, I think that's why he should really do a video of his van if it's still in any working order by now.
Kind of a cribs.
No, more like a trip my ride.
Well, it could be a combination of the two.
Right, so we'll wait for Tim to get back to us, whenever that may be. So, I guess that's it, isn't it? We know what the quarterfinals are going to look like.
You almost said semi there. We certainly two of the games. Well, no, actually, I was going to say we know what the semifinals. We actually know what half of the draw the final is going to come from.
Right.
Because...
Yes. Well, okay, so this is a good question to kick off on. The South Africa versus France game.
Yes.
The winner of that plays...
England versus Fiji.
Right, okay. So, in my mind, there's almost like... We almost know what the final will consist of.
The final will consist of one of Ireland and New Zealand and one of France and South Africa.
Yeah, so the real semi-finals are those two games. Because after that, whoever shows up is a minor inconvenience.
And I think that was kind of rammed home this weekend, because we spoke going into the World Cup before a single second of the real rugby had taken place, that there was kind of the top three or four. Then there was a gap to Scotland.
Yep.
And then there was a gap to kind of Argentina, England, Australia, Wales.
And I think that, broadly speaking, still stands.
I agree that still stands. But when we saw Ireland just demolish Scotland, it kind of proved the gap between the top four and the fifth place is
enormous.
It's a gulf. Therefore, now the fifth place team are no longer in the competition. Therefore, you're going to have two of the top four playing sixth and down, which is an enormous gulf.
We are joined by Tim Cocker. How are you, Tim? Don't say anything incriminating. We've already started.
Oh, okay. No worries.
Hello, Tim.
Hello.
Look, we can see him on screen. And we just mentioned before, Tim, that you've not made a video on YouTube about your van yet. Because...
I have.
Oh, have you?
Have you?
Yeah. Oh, when was this?
There's one called Van Life. Did it last weekend, I think.
Hang on. You were here?
Not last weekend. Well, it must have been before.
It's very suspicious. It sort of backs up my theory.
What's the theory?
That you won't do a video of your van because it's full of empty bottles of Cristal and party drugs.
Well, we were trying to
no comment.
We were trying to debate. We were trying to work out whether you'd be more embarrassed by the world seeing your Cristal and party drugs, or the world seeing the wheels of cheese and baguettes and pâté that you've been consuming while you've been over there.
It's shameful the way I'm abusing my body, whichever way you slice and dice it. But I actually keep it quite clean and tidy, probably because it's not mine. Yeah. And I have to give it back.
Nothing
being quite respectful.
There'd be nothing sadder than the shots of the juxtaposition between your CrossFit grips, but the fact that they're covered in camembert.
I have used them a few times, not as much as I'd anticipated, but yeah. Anyway.
Fair play.
Enough about the incredible amount of work I've got to do when I get back to the UK.
Yes.
On just getting back to where I was. But anyway.
We were talking about the amount of work that Scotland have got to do to catch up Ireland.
Yeah.
Hold on. How can we not start by talking about Portugal?
Oh, well, we just briefly mentioned that. But I think you're right. Good. We should go into a bit more detail, because that is one of my favourite games of the tournament so far. I absolutely loved that game that we've just watched.
It was a wild match, just full stop. Even if Portugal hadn't won, that game was insane.
It was absolutely brilliant. It was two teams that want to play rugby. Occasionally, it doesn't work for either of them, but not for lack of ambition and just passion and enjoyment. I loved seeing Portugal win and celebrate that victory, their first ever World Cup victory. As if they had won the World Cup.
Yeah, they got their first ever World Cup try in the Wales game. And
wow.
I spoke to a couple of the guys. The video's in the YouTube feed, but I spoke to a couple of the guys that were in the Portugal 2007 World Cup squad who said, just because they'd given a really good account of themselves against Wales and scored a try, that they described it as a game-changing moment for Portuguese rugby, and they were like, you could see how proud they were. I cannot imagine what anyone connected with rugby in Portugal is feeling like right now. I can't remember the last time I was as happy for a team that I don't support or have no connection to.
Yes,
it's amazing.
Yeah, same.
Well, let's just talk about Portugal for a second as a team. My takeaway from them is they make good decisions.
Mm.
I mean, their scrum half, Samuel, is it Marquez?
Marquez.
Oh, what a nine. He was brilliant.
He just doesn't make mistakes. Like, he just looks like a consummate professional. He reminds me of the kind of guy, if you just dug him out of the Premiership and then said, just play like a professional nine, he makes all the right decisions. What I like about him is, the box kicking's on point, but he's always in position to receive kicks. He's always doing his duty in the defensive realm, kick defence. Just knows his stuff.
And he's very much the French style nine, partly because he is a French nine.
He's a French nine, yeah.
French Portuguese has played almost all of his rugby in France for Pau and Carcassonne, and indeed Toulouse for a period. So he's playing at home, or one of his former homes today. He's a lovely player.
Yeah,
but their back three as well was ace. Oh,
Stolte plays at Stade Français. He's a real quality player.
Yeah.
But I've never heard of it. That said, I've never really heard of him, or I didn't really know a lot about him before this World Cup. But they've announced themselves. What a way to end the pool stages. And for all of the criticism that the World Cup draw has given us, and I, if I was Scottish, I'd feel hard done by. Pool C, how much entertainment?
Yeah.
Incredible, isn't it? Absolutely. And this Portugal result makes me think there is a real, real argument now to have like a second tier knockout.
I think there is becoming a bit of a groundswell.
Why would you not want to see more of this?
They've already ruled it out pretty much. Well, Rob Kitson in The Guardian last week had an article saying that the World Cup is expanding to 24 teams, but they're not going to have any kind of plate competition.
That's a joke. I mean, to me, there is more storylines being written at that level because I kind of know the storyline between Ireland and Scotland. Don't care. Yeah, I know the storyline between England and Australia. Don't care. But watching Argentina and Japan write their own history, that was exciting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, watching Portugal versus Fiji, when do they get to play each other? You know, that's exciting. Yeah. That's what the World Cup is about. It's about matching nations that don't play against each other and can be competitive. So to me, the Cup would be a great way, or a plate, sorry.
Yeah,
a great way to do this.
You just rule out the fifth-ranked team in every pool.
Yep.
And then play from there. Just mirror the quarters and semis and final.
And also, it has a material benefit to the group stages. Because a lot of these teams, like, okay, if not one or two, you're going out. So you end up playing dead rubbers really early on. But this would keep everything interesting because the only place you can't finish is last.
Yes, if you want. And then tie some funding to it or however you want to do it. But it really should happen. Because as well, now next weekend, we've got 2 days of rugby and there's two games per day. If you doubled that, you'd have 8 games over the over next weekend. And the following is just two games across 2 days. And same again for the final. He's obviously the third place and then final, 2 games, one of which no one really cares about,
mm-hmm.
across 2 days.
Yeah, and just look at the teams that we've... I mean, look at the teams that we've lost from the tournament who would... It's not like the olden days where these teams would be absolutely terrible. Samoa gave a good account of themselves. Tonga gave a good account of themselves. We've already mentioned Japan. There's a couple of tier two nations that are really making a name for themselves, like Australia. Scotland.
Uruguay's performance again this weekend less so, but against France, second week of the tournament, they put in a great shift and they got some lovely players. So
there is 80 minutes of rugby that we've already had that nobody's seen that I'm desperate to see, and that is Ireland against Portugal. Like probably like in very different ways, the two, or certainly the two most. The two best attacks in different ways, depending on whether you just want to go complete cavalier or real intricate skill and planning. But apparently it was a box office match behind closed doors. It was a game just basically to get Johnny Sexton up to speed. And apparently Portugal at times tore Ireland apart. And rumour is they scored 4 tries against Ireland.
Oh, bloody hell, this really happened.
Yeah,
it really happened.
Was it in La Rochelle? It was somewhere on the...
Something like that, yeah. It was behind closed doors. It was basically a game engineered to give Johnny Sexton some game time.
Yes.
Crikey.
Yeah.
And the Irish... And the rumours coming out of the... That have sort of apparently come out of the Ireland camp were like, oh, no, they're really good.
Well,
They are really good.
The thing about this Portugal team, so they do have a few weaknesses. So the weaknesses are their second rows look like... Like level 7 second rows. Do you know what I mean? Like just tall blokes. I was watching him in the line out, and I commented and Phil agreed. Oh, and you'll know the guy. You know, he looks like one of our friends called Mike Ainsworth. Like he literally looks like him in his prime. Just a tall bloke in the line out, which is great for line outs, but you know, very little else. And the other thing is zero threat in the breakdown. So they don't get to steal ball. If they could fix big second rows and a breakdown threat, and I know that's a fairly elite shopping list, they would be really good.
Yeah, lovely team. Lovely all-round team.
What a job Patrice Lagisque has done. He's a French coach coaching Portugal, and I'd take him for England like that.
Yeah, that's maybe there'll be a few people
Out for him. His stock is... on another level. I just remembered in the last World Cup, it was fantastic seeing Uruguay beat Fiji. Yes. I think it's just Fiji in the last game of their pool matches just go, I'll go on then. They're just such nice, they're such lovely men. They might be giants and physical freaks, but they're just such soft, lovely men. They go, go on then. Well, have a win.
So I was talking to JB about this, and I think there's a tricky mental edge to this. If you are the kind of team that's either already qualified or who's heavily, heavily backed to qualify. I think we've seen this a couple of times this weekend. One, because you will switch off if you think the job is done or the job is almost done. Like, naturally, you will relax a little bit more. But also, you will be terrified of getting injured and missing the quarterfinal, basically the biggest game of your life.
Mm.
So, you will always dial it back. Now, I've kind of thought of that while watching the England-Samoa game, not really to make an excuse for England, but perhaps to explain some of their malaise. But it was definitely true in this Fiji game, I think. Whatever it was, they didn't play as well as they could have done. But it meant Portugal got the win, which I'm delighted to see. And I'm certain we'll see a better version of Fiji next weekend.
I hope so. Because if this version of Fiji shows up, England are going to have a field day with them.
Well, England weren't great themselves. Right?
No. I'm happy to talk about just how much they weren't good. We could go from the sublime to the ridiculous.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's jump to yesterday afternoon's 4:45 England versus Samoa.
Well, this was a classic case of players desperate not to play again. I mean, you look
and
at
people
some...
booked holidays, do you reckon? And they're just getting in trouble with the missus if they
something was going on because they were awful.
But they were already through, weren't they? And I think they had already topped the group.
Yeah.
Even if they got nothing, Argentina only could have drawn level with them on points, which means England win in the head-to-head.
Yeah.
So it was... England could not have finished anywhere else than top, I think.
Now, yeah, refereeing decisions in this game, and actually the Portugal game, some of them were horrific. Absolutely horrific. And so was some of the commentary, actually. Let me just go back to the Portugal game. Some of the worst comments. In fact, I'm going to just round up the Portugal game with this before we go on to England. Everybody, right, Fiji, the commentary team, the analysts, the referee, they all tried their hardest to ruin this game by being substandard. And it's only the fact that Portugal were really good which kind of saved it. But one of the things which got me, this combination of complete incompetence, was the fact that Portugal break, they're storming down the near touchline, and a Fijian guy high tackles the Portuguese ball carrier. Right, it wasn't a hard high tackle. It wasn't a card.
It was like a seatbelt.
Seatbelt right over the head, and the commentator goes, "Oh, high tackle there, but that won't matter." I was like, "It bloody will! It bloody will!" Because they immediately turned it over, and then Fiji scored a try. Now, not only does the commentator have no clue what she's talking about, right? But in addition to that, if this was another team, I suspect that would have been looked at. Luke Pearce would have seen it. And what is the TMO there for? I mean, I thought we were meant to be changing behaviours. And it is actually a 14-point swing. This could have been a completely different game.
Well, it reminded me as well.
Well, Eddie Jones might be the one person who's most in agreement with you there, JB.
Yeah, good point. It reminded me of the Italy-France game, the first half Italy try.
That Ferrari try was ridiculous.
That was disallowed, which was totally ridiculous. But that was a less clear penalty than this one was against Portugal. So
yes.
It's the inconsistency that we've said before. If there's bad decisions all the time, you kind of get used to it. When you're supposed to have such a high standard and you can get, or not even get things right, but you can be pedantic and pernickety when it suits, when larger team, bigger team is getting screwed over, then it just doesn't seem right.
Yeah, it felt like ITV emptied their bench, like got everyone some playing time in this week's broadcast, because it wasn't particularly good in any aspect.
Just on the French TV is, I don't understand French entirely. I pick up little bits and bobs when they're talking. But what I get is an overwhelming sense that they absolutely love rugby.
Mm.
They just love it. You can tell that everything they do, they're smiling. as they do it.
Do you think? And, do you think Hugh Woozencroft loves rugby?
Massive. He must be. He's on ITV, JB, doing the Rugby World Cup. He'll be a massive. He's a massive rugby fan.
I agree. He loves rugby. There's no two ways about that.
He will. I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, England.
England.
Why was I talking about? What made me think about that? Oh, refereeing decisions. So, another awful refereeing decision.
Not letting Ollie Chessam's try stand. I agree, 100%.
Which one was Ollie Chessam's try?
The one where he said it got disallowed because he apparently propelled himself forward.
Oh
with
yeah,
his arm.
That was a try. I agree with you there.
I mean, 100% a try.
Yeah. Well, the only thing I can think of really is if the knee goes down. Which his knee had not gone down.
No.
Then you're in second movement territory, aren't you?
Well, as in getting back to your knee and then propelling yourself. Yeah. No, it was just a try. It was funny. The TMO went, let me show you that again. Before you make a decision, let me show you that again in real time. And then played an even slow-mo version of it.
But...
I mean, England did a lot of things slowly in this game, but that was another level.
Now, in the NFL, I know it's a different sport. If your elbow touches the floor, that is the same as a knee touching the floor.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what the laws are in rugby, but I would say that's a reasonable standard. If your elbow is on the floor, you are down, and therefore you can't propel yourself forward.
It probably is a reasonable. I don't know if that's in the laws.
I don't know either.
You always judge it on the knee.
Because if it was the knee, he's not down.
Yeah, it's always been the law that you can extend your arms to score a try.
Yeah.
But it's the propelling forward, isn't it, that's the issue. But no, I would have given that a try. I think, if that was Samoa... not given that try, I would have lost my shit. As it happens, I had other things to shout about because the Nigel R. Wong third try, not his fourth try, his third try, was the knock-on.
Yes.
And that knock-on, I mean, it might have been a knock-on, it might not have been a knock-on, but it wasn't clear and obvious. And
was not clear and obvious, no.
The extra points had been kicked.
Yeah, now that
law's changed.
Yeah, they have changed that law, but it kind of makes a mockery. Like, and as someone watching as a fan, you want to kind of have closure. You want to know. So the 60 seconds, if you can't make a decision within those 60 seconds for the kick, it by definition is not clear and obvious. Therefore, you should be out of time. It takes that long to confirm. Now, I actually do think it probably was the right decision. But I would have been happy for that try to stand because it took so long.
Yeah, I completely agree. They just didn't need to go back for that. I can't see how, as a TMO, you look at that and go, oh, this needs to be reviewed. It did not need to be reviewed. It was not clear and obvious. There was a forest of hands. It was impossible to know who propelled that ball forward. I mean, you can have a guess, but that's not what we're here for. The laws state clear and obvious, and it was not clear or obvious.
Yeah. We need to limit that somehow. But now the Pandora's box has been opened, you're never going to.
That's the case with TMOs and everything in general, isn't it? Once you can check one thing, you can check everything, and it's just a slow creep towards a robot
now
officiating rugby.
I did like an unorthodox use of the TMO in the last second of the Portugal game for the kick. Where the nine was going to take...
Oh, yes. Good point.
He was lining up the kick from the 5-metre line instead of the
coaches were going spare.
15-metre. Yeah, rightly so. You're making this way harder, unnecessarily harder.
God, I was nervous that kick.
And and Luke Pearce, like, I think it's probably outside his remit to use it for that purpose, but it was exactly the right call. Like, it really mattered at that time.
Yeah.
And it's for an extra 5 seconds in a conversion attempt when he stopped the clock as well is just irrelevant. Like, just get on with it.
So, just a quick question. James Lay, the Samoan prop, he looks so much like the old All Blacks prop, and I can't remember who. Do you know which one I mean?
Not entirely certain.
I'll find him for you. The guy who was a doorman. There was a guy who was a doorman. Who played for the All Blacks?
Oh yes.
That could be anyone actually. I bet there's a lot of doormen.
The Samoan prop with the big moustache.
Yes.
Tunga Fassi.
Yes, maybe that's him. That's him. I was just looking at him and thinking,
now you said it, I do know. I've got a picture of him up there.
Yes, can you get Tunga Fassi?
No, I don't think Tunga Fassi is the one I'm thinking of. It's not.
But there is a prop that looked just like that.
Yeah, it's not Tungafassi.
No, it's not him.
That's him?
It's not.
Okay, fine.
It's not him. That's not. I can see the one I'm thinking of. I just...
Yeah, it looks like James Lay.
Anyway. Yeah, the guy that looks like James Lay.
He was in the 2019 World Cup squad, so I'm just having a look. No, maybe he wasn't. Anyway, it really doesn't matter.
Yes.
One of those
not great podcast content, us looking up pictures, trying to find a face match between two props.
Yes. So, yeah. I mean, England were underwhelming. That's the first thing.
They actually started okay.
They did start well.
Which has been a bit of a theme recently of kind of starting okay, and then after 10 minutes falling apart.
If you were just going to use words to describe England's performance, descriptive words, what would you pick? I'd go slow.
Wilting.
Hesitant.
Yeah.
Degenerating. What?
Cumbersome.
Yes.
Clunky.
I'm not sure what the... More like...
Clunky's a good one.
Yeah.
Nothing flowed. Like, the England team at the minute, this is why, right, so all the chat, and I'm sure we can get onto it, and there's definitely a conversation to be had about personnel, but I've said this before. All the chat now is about, this player should start, this player should be on the bench, this player should be on this position. I just don't care about that. I'm quite happy to have the conversation, but like this England team cannot pass the ball from one side of the pitch to the other, looking like competent rugby players. I mean, that's not a personnel issue.
Personnel issue to me, mate.
Yeah, but you swap back A out for back B, or back B out for back C.
Do you not think
it doesn't matter? It doesn't change it.
It doesn't change it. So there's something in the top 2 inches. My theory is, and this may be just something you've said before, JB, that I'm now, you know, speaking back to you, it wouldn't be the first time I've done it, but they don't believe in Borthwick, but there is no one that has got the guts to actually form any sort of resistance.
Well,
and it's that you sort of said, talked about the good soldiers in the past, didn't you?
Yes. Well, there is one guy who's not a good soldier, and I think
Joe Marler.
Yes. Well, not just Joe Marler. There's another one too, and I think England need leaders. It was Danny Kerr. Like Danny Kerr comes on, and like sometimes it backfires for him because he plays his game, and that's it. But when he came on, he turned the game on his own. He turned the game because he's the only one that has shown any real leadership, and that's what you need, really. Someone say, "Well, hang on a minute, this is how I play the game, and you need to do this differently because you're currently all dreadful."
But that, I think that in itself is a tactic, and I've said this before, that England will try not to lose any game up to, say, 60, 65, 70 minutes.
Mm.
And then if they're winning, they will keep up with that tactic. If they are losing, that is the only time when they will kind of let it rip. And that was... So I think the Danny Kerr coming on coincided with that change of strategy.
Yeah, I've seen enough of Freddie Stewart now. I love the guy. He's not an international fullback.
He does a few things very, very well.
Yeah.
He does other things not so well. And one of my... Like, we've spoken about his defensive stuff in the past. One of my frustrations in this game was Manu makes a break in the first half, running down the right-hand side. Freddie Stewart... You might not have spotted this, but Freddie Stewart is the closest man tracking the ball. And he runs a lazy attacker's line that basically means the covering Samoan winger blocks Manu's pass the whole time.
Yeah.
Freddie Stewart never fights to either delay his run or find a wider channel, which would make it a harder pass, but there is a pass on.
Yeah.
It just ends up running this line, which means that Manu has no option but to take contact with three guys.
Yeah.
A more astute running line from Stewart would have created a pass option for Manu, and he goes in, he scores a try if he runs a better line.
Freddie Stewart, right, I'm starting to think that he is so good at certain things that he neglects the other areas of his game. He needs to be sent back to his club, and he needs to work constantly on everything that he's bad at, which it turns out he's like an A-plus at, say, two things. High balls, yeah, sometimes.
I think he's very, very good at high... I think everyone has the occasional fumble, yeah, with a high ball.
Yeah.
He is very, very good at high ball.
Yeah, if you're getting like 3 out of 4, yeah, okay, fine.
I think he's more than 75%.
Yeah, something like that.
I think we'd notice if the man who's getting talked up as the world's best guy under the high ball.
No. Was, I think there's a difference 75%. Between like simply just catching it. I think contested high balls are a different game. If you're 75% on contested high balls, attacking and defensive, that's amazing.
But if you narrow it to just two contested high balls.
Yeah, if he's dropping one in every four.
On normal kicks, that would be an issue.
So, he's really good at that. But, like, and ball carrying. I think he's a very good ball carrier.
Well, because he's 6'5 and 105 plus kg.
Everything else is just not good enough. It's not terrible, but it's not good enough for international rugby.
I tend to agree.
Yeah.
And also, with all the talk around 10-12 reflecting on this and thinking about it, international rugby now, I think you do need two playmakers in a back line. And, I look at Ireland and I go, well, actually, they spread their skill set right across the team. And that would be the ideal, to have lots of people that are just very, very good. New Zealand, I'd say, are a bit like that as well.
But, yes, it helps when you have at least two Barrett brothers.
Yeah, and
that does help.
And a D-Mac off the bench.
Yeah.
You need kicking ability. You need someone that can win the gain line battle. You need some brains that can open up opposition defences. 15, I think, is probably the optimum position to get that second pair of eyes and that second creative force. And it appears to be, when you look at the rest of rugby, that's where it is. Once upon a time, it was 10-12.
Yeah.
It can still work in that fashion, but 10-15 is probably optimum.
Or
I completely agree.
It can also work at 9-10.
I think
like France do.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
very much so. You could get really complex, couldn't you, and like move the 12 to 15. And what I think 12 needs to be an absolute warrior now. It needs to be an absolute rock of a human being. You look at Bendiaki, who's just magnificent.
Jonathan Donty.
Yeah.
Donty, Dielande.
Dielande or Esther Hazen, take your pick.
You just need an absolute warrior. Kicking's great. I mean, it's lovely. It's a nice thing to have, but ultimately you need to smash things.
But that said, it is possible to find other ways to do it. Phil just mentioned France and Ireland, partly because of the high number of people they take from Leinster and the way the game is set up, and they have a lot of time as a team. That word cohesion has become a bit of a cliche with Ireland, but that just demonstrates that you can skin a cat in lots of different ways. Crack a nut, skin a cat, whatever metaphor you want to use.
Skin a nut and crack a cat.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's hard to do, and it's taken them a long time to develop.
Alex Mitchell had a really poor game. And I'm really disappointed with this, because I thought he was going to be one of those guys that they pick and he just swims.
Well, I'll come to his defence a little bit, because, he did have a bad game. But the forward pack, the ball that they were giving him was awful. And one way you can tell this, if you go back and watch the game, look how many times the referee said, use it, to England.
Yeah.
Like, when you watch good teams, you never hear use it, because the ball's already gone.
That's a really good indicator, that is.
Yeah, you will very rarely hear it with Ireland.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really good indicator.
Because they want really fast ruck ball. Good, yeah, very good point, Tim.
I don't know what it is with England forwards. They're just... I can't even describe them. They're just not good enough. They're not good enough. Outside of Ben Earl. I mean, obviously, Tom Curry. I mean, Tom Curry, Courtney Laws. The names are world-class, but the performances aren't.
Yeah, Tom Curry, he's not played a lot of rugby through injury and suspension. Courtney Laws is... I hate to say it. He's probably past his peak. Certainly his performances appear to be past his peak.
People said the same about Peter Omani about a year or two ago.
Yeah, that is true.
I love courts, but yeah.
I would 100% love to be proved wrong next week and the week after. And the week after that.
Well, the front row is one that disturbs me. There is no... I mean, there's lots of pouting. There's loads of pouting and, like, you know, just nonsense pre-game and in presenting from Genge in all the interviews and the attitude and whatnot. But, like, they just don't have any bites. They didn't do anything.
Which other top international team would our props start for? Or in some cases even get in the match day squad for?
Not South Africa.
Oof.
No.
Not Ireland. Wales. Nope. They'd probably get a game at Wales.
Yeah.
Both of them. All. Yeah.
France, no.
France, not even close.
New Zealand. Genge might have a crack at New Zealand.
New Zealand, yeah. Genge, if he was playing like he was a couple of years ago, yes. Playing like he is now.
It might not even be Genge's fault, actually. It might be the case that England are playing such a slow, methodical game, if that's the right word for it, that he doesn't get to crash balls in as and when.
Yeah, and that would be kind of, that's my kind of thought on that personnel isn't the issue, it's other factors. Because I think, honestly, if you took Johnny Sexton, who was brilliant again in the 50 minutes that he played, we'll have to talk about that. If you plucked him out and you just swapped him and George Ford around, we'd be talking about George Ford today being world class and Johnny Sexton being mediocre and maybe past it.
Yeah, it's a good point.
Do you know, like, I'm going to go back to this pack. I'm thinking about what they do well. Like, when's the last time you saw Courtney Laws use his hands or carrying the channel? The things he's really good at. Like, you just don't see it. Like, Tom Curry.
Or putting a big hit.
Just leathering people. Like, Ben Earl has done well. Tom Curry is a monstrous ball carrier. Yeah. He is monstrous. Like, he's one of the better ball carriers wearing a 7 or a 6 shirt on the planet when he wants to be.
He got a turnover in that first 10 minutes, and I turned to the guy I was watching the game with at the Stade de France, and I said, I haven't seen that in a long time.
I think Charlie Morgan brought this up in a piece he wrote before the World Cup. Like, just not that many turnovers. So you got all these guys that do things. The only one who I'd expect to excel in this sort of system would be Maril, because he's all about interventions and work rate. And it does, that would lend itself to Maril's skill set, and he's been, well, useless.
Yeah, he's not stood out. He's not been himself.
And Ollie Chasum is England's only attacking threat.
or a 36-year-old Danny Kerr.
Yes.
Oh, and Jamie George is our second kicking option.
Wow.
Fantastic.
Wow.
We've sleepwalked into it's 4 from 4, top of the pool, and we're in a quarter final against Fiji. Yeah. I'd have bitten your hand off for that.
100%. Yeah.
And also, can we just talk about England's defence a second? Because that's another thing which is very worrying. I think the defence itself is pretty good. Like, the structure of the defence is pretty good, but the one-on-one tackling is miserable. So when they're getting excited, they're okay. But there again, I say the structure. One of the things which really baffled me is the amount of time they were given the Samoa back row to carry the ball onto them. I'm thinking, like, if you wanted to put yourself in the worst position, would it not be letting Fritz Lee run the ball at you over and over again? Would that not be, like, a really stupid thing to do? Or Brian Aloise, or whatever his name is.
Yeah. Alan Aloise.
Or any of the back line, any of the Samoa back line. A few of those boys had a great game. The fullback had a good game. The two wingers.
Nigel Arwan was superb.
Yeah, Arwan was lovely. Sopoanga had a good game.
Yes, he really did. He's actually had a good World Cup. He's a little bit heavy.
He is a little bit heavy. Leo Leofano has played in some of the other games and shaken a bit on some of the kicks. Like in the Argentina game, if he had his kicking boots on, I think they would have won that game. I think the best player wearing a Samoa shirt was Theo McFarland.
Best player on the pitch.
Yeah, actually, you're 100% right. He was the best player on the park.
Yeah, he was magnificent.
He was so good.
Did you know that he once played basketball?
No. When was this?
Did they finally mention that in comms?
They didn't. I don't think they did, actually.
They did. So,
oh, did they?
Three minutes into the game where he just makes a tackle and Ben Kay brought it up. I was like, oh. Like, obviously, there are people watching that game who've never seen Theo McFarland, so I don't blame Ben Kay for bringing it up. But I was thinking, surely playing rugby for Samoa is a better accolade than playing rugby for... So I looked up... Do you know where... So Samoa, whatever they are, 15th ranked in the world in rugby. Do you know where they are in basketball?
608th.
They are 122nd.
Wow.
Just above... Just around Suriname, Singapore and Belize. So he has two caps for the 122nd ranked team, where he's playing for one of the top... 15 top 20 ranked teams in the world in rugby, and one of the top rugby club teams in the world, who are renowned for developing and unearthing talent. So, like, those are better accolades.
Far better.
Not the basketball one.
Yeah, and actually, you say you forgive Ben Kay. I don't. Like, I would forgive, like, some guy that they've just bust into the World Cup because they need, you know, someone without much experience, but Ben Kay should know better than this.
Well, it is.
Phil's point is a good one. That
Ben Kay should find
the vast
more
majority of the audience wouldn't know that.
Yeah. Can I just say about the basketball fact? What does it actually add to you?
Well, that's the thing. Like, he's got, I guess everyone thinks he's got good hands, but then he's supposed to be one of the best rugby players on the planet, so he should have good hands.
Yeah, there's only a good fact if the basketball team, if you played for like the Chicago Bulls, then it's a good fact.
Yeah. If we, like, yeah, maybe he was in the training squad for the Chicago Bulls, or he played like double A college basketball or something.
That's
like
that.
But yeah, Phil's right. Samoa is absolute bobbins. It's probably better if you're playing for, I don't know, Manchester Giants.
Yeah, they're local team. Like, I bet there's lads who played England this week that played a high level of cricket than Dave McFarlane played basketball. And no one mentions that.
Although
Tom Curry was offered a contract by Derbyshire.
Well, Ben Earl was a high level, was apparently a better cricketer than rugby player in his youth.
I can believe that, and he'd be a world class crossfitter too.
Well, the Curry boys and Ben Earl would be fairly handy at
that.
That'd
be amazing.
And I do love, like, we for a long time have loved that kind of knowledge, like the Nick Kennedy's mum's an author.
Thanks, guys.
Whose mum taught Ed Sheeran? Is that Johnny May?
Johnny May's mum taught Ed Sheeran music.
Yeah. So we do love that kind of stuff.
Whose mum worked with my friend's... Oh, Danny Grucock's mum worked with our friend Trev's mum, right?
Oh,
so,
really?
So we played with rugby with a guy called Trev.
Yeah, all three of us.
All three of us did.
Yeah.
And one of my favourite stories was Trev explaining how his mum explained to Danny Grucock's mum how Trev was really good at rugby, but did not know what Danny Grucock's mum's son did.
No, Trev is really good at rugby.
He is really good.
He played in Leicester Grammar team that had Harry Ellis in. So he was a genuinely, and he's like, he's not the hardest trainer.
No.
But he is one of the best, like, certainly one of the best tacklers I ever played with. Such lovely technique.
Even so, would you tell Danny Grucock's mum that?
No, absolutely not. He's a great player, but
yeah,
Mrs. Grucock.
Yeah, there's another one as well. It was Luke Narraway's dad's a butcher.
Yeah.
Yeah, stuff like that. I mean, we live for this stuff.
Karen Dickey's dad, fisherman.
Jack Knoll. Fishmonger or fisherman? I'm not sure.
I think they both might be fishermen, but either or. They work with fish.
Yeah, yeah, it's fine. So, well done, Samoa. I mean, a team that I'd like to see more of. But they're going home. But they go home with some style, finally. I think.
Yeah, and I will say that Lima Sopawanga, they missed him earlier in the pool stage because you said Theo McFarlane, best player on the pitch. I thought Lima Sopawanga was. He was amazing.
He did play well. Mm. He controlled the game well. And although he did miss a couple of kicks, didn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. It's true. But yeah, they gave a good account of themselves. And
yes.
On they go. Scotland, Ireland. My goodness me. Ireland are ridiculously good.
So the point I was making before you arrived, Tim, was, like we said early in the tournament, before the tournament, that there was the top four, then Scotland in fifth, and then a gap in everyone else further down. And this game just highlighted how big the gap is between the top four and Scotland and the fifth best team. It's an enormous, like, this was a beatdown. Scotland got, they made it look respectable because of their two consolation tries in the last 20 minutes. This game was done. Ireland had a four try bonus point at halftime. It was so one sided.
So I'm going to just say something which my wife said. Right, and it's nothing to do. Something she spotted in the game, but another thing we need to clear up for the TV audience. She said to me, "That's the second penalty now, but what is the difference between holding on and not releasing?" Which is a really good point, isn't it? We need to be more concise with our language because there's civilians out there who have watched the same offence and don't know it's the same offence. Because we say holding on, and then the next one goes, "Oh, that's the same, but it's not releasing. What's the difference?" Good question.
Good question.
Good question. Very perceptive point. I like it.
Yeah. To me, this game was over after about 8 minutes, I think.
And so you're even, because I was half time when that fourth try, 39 minutes, was it Hendo? Anyway, well, after half time, the game was done. But eight minutes, you're probably right.
8 minutes was one for me because Scotland had so much ball and they were going nowhere. And to me, that was just the most demoralising thing. When you've got the ball and you can't get through the defensive line, it doesn't matter where on the position that you are, the position of the field that you are, the advantage automatically turns to the defensive team.
And I'll build on that from what you're saying, because you're right. I've seen Scotland constantly running into a brick wall and just going, oh, that didn't work that time. Let's try it again. And the same goes with just first 5 minutes of a game, penalty in a kickable position. You only had to win by 7-8 points. Kick the bloody goal. It was like they were going for broke from minute one. They did not kick hardly at all that entire game, and as a result, you removed one whole threat. So Ireland just went, right, we'll chuck everyone in the defensive line, fly up at you, and Scotland got nowhere. You need to have that nuance and that textures to crack a nut, particularly a defence as good as Ireland's.
I think Ireland are they're not very good. They are a brilliant conventional rugby team now. So if you're going to beat them, you're going to be having to use some sort of unorthodox tactic. I don't know what that is yet. I'm hoping someone's looking at it and thinking,
Schmidt will have been thinking about it for a while, I can guarantee you that.
Yeah, like what...
That's a good point.
But what is that? So the one which I've been raving about of late was setting up the box kick. So all the escorting forwards on one side and then whipping out to your fly half and then going the other side to an isolated winger, something like that. Look back to Argentina-France in the opening game of the other French World Cup all those years ago. Argentina won that game by just kicking the ball over and over and over again. Now, I don't think those two things are going to beat Ireland, but there'll be something out there which will disrupt Ireland, because rugby is not about solutions, it's about trade-offs. And what have Ireland traded off to do this? And that's the answer you need in order to beat Ireland. And even if you get that answer, you might not beat them.
Yeah, and it might just be that the trade-offs are so limited, for the point that Tim made out before, that like certainly in their back line, they are so well-rounded.
Mm.
Like you kind of have multiple players who can be wide running threats, multiple players who can be crash ball threats, multiple players who can be
clearly Jameson Gibson Park and Gary Ringrose were the wingers for a massive chunk of that game.
Yeah, Gibson Park on the wing repeatedly, like phase after phase, was interesting to see. Yeah.
Well, I tell you another lovely thing about Ireland is the precision with the ball.
Like, that second try, wow. Yeah.
Well, the first try, to be fair. I mean, just when they break, they know they've got a mission in hand, and invariably they complete that mission. It's very impressive.
Mm.
Yep. So, I think that the team that's going to beat them is going to be unconventional, or they have to manhandle them to the nth degree, and they need to keep beating them up until they're dead.
Yeah, South Africa have tried that once, and it almost worked.
I would do that again.
Probably should have worked. I think it could work. Like if South Africa Ireland is the final, I've said this before, I think South Africa do win it second time round.
Yeah, I don't think France can do it. I think France will.
I think France can.
I mean, France could if they stay consistent for 80 minutes. France will batter Ireland for 10, switch off for 10. Batter them for 10, switch, and that's not enough. Because in those
France will do some things that Ireland can't predict. France-Ireland, one of the reasons I would love that as a final is it would be that perfect balance. Both incredible attacks, but France, because they have the capacity to do things that nobody was expecting, least of all the opposition.
Mm.
And Ireland, and what was so impressive about watching them against Scotland is like, oh, we know what they're going to do here. They're going to do the Johnny Sexton wraparound, decoy runner out the back. You know what they're going to do and you still can't stop it.
Can't, can you?
Yeah.
All these years.
Yeah. It is amazing. There must be something in it, because from where we're watching, it just looks like Johnny Sexton's about to do a wraparound, and then he does it, and somehow there's a hole somewhere for someone.
Yeah, I think pre-tournament, I think Tim said it. A lot of people saying it, but I think Tim was just the brutality that Bundyaki.
Yeah,
I mean that's
played some good rugby at the moment.
That's so underrated, isn't it? Just to have an absolute rock. Because the wraparound's nice, and Ringrose is a beautiful player, and everyone will say, oh, look at that wonderful break, which is great, but it's all because Bundyaki is beating men up.
Yes.
And that's what it's all about. And then you can have all those other things. But he is so important now because he does so many good things. And like Scotland could not get through that channel. It just wasn't an option for them, whether it be through Finn Russell or through their inside centre. It just didn't happen.
So for Scotland... Like we will get to talk about Ireland more in this tournament, Maybe just 1 week more, who knows? But for Scotland, this has got to be a disappointing World Cup. Because the two games, basically they knew they had to win one of those two games, South Africa and Ireland, and they didn't really come close.
No.
Like, they got bullied by South Africa, certainly in the end, certainly in the second half, when the kind of scales tipped a bit more against them.
They simply don't have the horsepower.
They just, this was a great shot for them, and they just came up short. So is it, like, I can imagine there are some conversations going on in Scottish rugby clubs, and indeed the SRU, and indeed perhaps the changing rooms of Scotland on Saturday. Is this Townsend's fault? Is it Finn Russell's fault? Is it for that exact reason that you say, JB, that they've got a few South Africans, but maybe not quite enough South Africans?
That
now
would be what I would be thinking. That's because what do they lack? They lack the ability to bend a line, and they've tried a lot of solutions to this. I thought Rory Dodge, is that his name?
Dodge. Yeah.
Rory. Rory's a Scottish name. That'd be
fine. Close enough. You know,
he did really well carrying the ball. But they've only got one of him. Like, there's just not enough.
Dempsey's the one for me.
Dodge
has been all right. Dempsey, I think, all tournament and pre-tournament, he's carried really well.
Yeah.
He's big, he's athletic, he does it over and over and over again. But yeah, you're right. In the pack, they've not got enough. And they probably don't bring Duan into the game as much as they should do.
No.
You'd want him through the middle because he is... He's then like, you've got an Australian number 8 and a South African winger as your two best carrying threats.
Yeah,
you got to use them more. They do use Dempsey. They don't use Van der Merwe as much in that heavy traffic.
And you know, it's quite lazy, isn't it? Say what they need is a world class second row and a world class front row and a world class back row.
Who doesn't?
But they do need more carrying threats. And I think maybe what rugby is teaching us this year is you can play beautiful rugby, and that's great, but you need big men. And it's when you get the big guys and the cohesion and the beautiful rugby all in one go. You can't have one of these things. You can take a team so far. Like, I think Wales are going to find this out the hard way. Like, you can optimise that team, but the talent of that team will take you as far as that team will go.
Yeah. Speaking of beautiful rugby, did either of you watch the Japan-Argentina game?
Oh, I did. Yeah. I watched the first half and then I had to go out.
Because there was...
Finally, Mateo Carreras delivered on what we were expecting pre-World Cup.
Oh, I think it was his first try, where he hits that line off the number 9. When you're like, the number 9, you know he's not quite got enough gas, and then from nowhere, from the side, from off-screen, the man who does have enough gas just burns onto it. I loved that. But this was...
Has he gone from Newcastle yet? Has some big French team paid him delivered him a truckload of money to his house? Surely, like...
Not that I'm aware of.
I'm just going to enjoy him while he is in England, but it can't be much longer.
He's in Newcastle for the love of the city. I mean, I don't think you understand that, Tim.
He's a big Toon fan now that they're doing well in the Premier League and Champions League.
Yes, of course.
But just enjoy his rugby, but also enjoy his quads. His upper legs, his legs, all of his legs are massive.
Talking of a massive man, Amutomo Fakatava?
Yes. Oh, yes.
That was very impressive.
The second row.
He is huge.
He's huge, and there's not many huge men who would do that. That try for a 50-metre try?
Actually, I say he's huge.
With a chip and chase?
Like, he looks massive. He's not actually that big. I looked him up. He's 6'4". So he's not a giant, but he looked fairly big. He looked fairly big. But
selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow with Shopify.
Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Yeah, it's an incredible chip and chase.
So that was those beautiful tries, like the Carreras, well, the Carreras one we mentioned before. That was a beautiful try, but in this game, there was strike plays off set piece. There's strike plays off scrums, which seems to be like scrums for many teams seems only a route to get 3 points, but
yes.
to witness actual well-conceived, well-thought-through, and well-executed strike plays off scrums was fantastic to see from both teams.
Agreed.
So, enjoyed this game. I did always, even though Japan were kind of always in it until the last few minutes, I did feel like Argentina were always... They always just had enough. They were always going to win this game.
I do wonder if England got Argentina the last game of the tournament rather than the first game, if we'd be looking at a completely different set of events.
I was having a similar thought. Like I wondered if... So you know they kind of say you never peak too early.
Yeah.
So if Argentina, like Checker is an astute operator, if he'd have made that England game their final, it kind of would have been downhill from there.
Yeah.
So if you make that a less important game, and knowing that whether you play Wales or Fiji or Australia, in England, Argentina's group, it doesn't actually matter if you come first or second. It's not the drop-off between, well, as we found out, as it's played out, Wales and Fiji, but were it Australia and Wales or any combination of those, the drop-off is not actually that much, so it's not a huge benefit, but you get to time your kind of march into the quarterfinals, right?
Yeah, I tell you what would be a concern if I was Argentina is the way that Japan, certainly first off, seemed to do whatever they wanted to the Argentina scrum.
That is the biggest concern for Argentina, I think.
They really manhandled them.
Yeah.
And the Japanese scrum is actually very good. People don't talk about it enough. It's very technically proficient. But Argentina got battered. They got really, really battered.
That is their weakness. And it's weird because historically we'd always be talking about an amazing Argentine scrum.
Yeah, and now you've got to talk about what they really are, which is a set of incredible backs and a lovely back row too.
Fantastic back row. Fantastic hooker. Or pair of hookers. Props not as good as they once were. And second rows...
Lavanini is an absolute show pony.
Yeah.
There's no other word for it.
Petty and Lavanini are... show pony, they are volatile as well. It's not caught them out yet, but it will.
It's coming.
It's 2019 World Cup. We were there in Tokyo.
Well, our bodies were there.
you were there in body, not yeah. If not in spirit. The spirit was in the cans of Strong Zero.
Exactly. I think Alamona was probably the better of the three locks that they could have fielded on the weekend, but yeah, there you go. It is interesting because you see Argentina going to these quarterfinals now, and because they've not played so well and Wales are unbeaten, Wales are almost like, Wales should be favourites.
Mm.
I'm sure this works both ways because I'm pretty sure Argentina will be thinking, well, who have we got? Wales.
Yeah.
And they'll be licking their lips at this prospect.
Weirdly, 100%. I think every team in that half of the draw, the two games in Marseille, by the way, which if that's where I'm going to be, I'm going to be in Marseille. There's a big chunk of me going, oh, man, can I go to Paris? Those games are just box office. Marseille will be fun. Anyway, I'm not complaining. But it almost feels like every one of those teams would be better having the mindset that they're the underdog. But you can't have four underdogs.
No. Well, I think all those teams on that side of the draw think everyone in that side of the draw is terrible. They all think that everyone else is terrible.
Yes.
Whereas on the other side of the draw, they're all playing big boy rugby, thinking everyone's bloody brilliant.
Thinking, win this one and we can have a week off and wait for the final.
Yeah.
It kind of is that, though.
It is.
I can't see. From this side of the draw, from the Argentina, England, Wales, Fiji, I cannot see any of those teams really firing a shot against the other side. I think the best equipped to do it, to push for an upset, would be Wales, just because they are such a system team and they're so hard to beat.
Yeah.
Although losing Faletau is...
I don't think it'll make much of a difference, to be honest. I mean, he's great, but...
I don't know. He's kind of gain line. He wins the gain line for them a lot.
But, like, what are we talking about? The difference between, like, losing in the quarter or losing in the semi? Like, they're not getting to a final, so...
True.
Do you want to talk about any of the other games? Because France battered Italy. No one cares about that.
Italy are embarrassing. France are ridiculous and very, very good.
You were at the game, were you not, Tim?
Yeah. Atmosphere's incredible. There's one song. I want to know what it is. Someone please email contactedchasers@gmail.com. There's a song that they play in the stadiums. And the fans go nuts for it. I don't know what it is, but I want to know because I love it. It's a banger.
Ooh, don't know.
Can you not
tell
use,
me, please?
Can you not use your French to ask one of the other patrons in the ground?
I at the next ground I'm at, I will. It was only like when I was at the game the other night. I was like, oh, I love this. I didn't ask anyone then, and I wish I had. I will. It's a proper tune. Mm. I have to say that's the one awesome thing about Marseille, which I'm looking forward to. That's where the ground is the best of any of the stadiums.
Oh, that stadium looks incredible.
The atmosphere is crazy. And it does bring... Wasn't it in Marseille? Didn't England play a quarter-final in 2007?
Yes.
In France?
They did.
They were written off and everyone wrote them off. And
they beat Australia, didn't they?
It was.
They beat Australia in Marseille.
The Andrew Sheridan show against Australia.
Amazing.
That's right. So,
he sent two of the Australian props to the bin.
That was awesome.
Yeah, and you remember just looking at the Australian players' faces thinking they were just shell-shocked. This wasn't meant to happen. What's going on?
It was in the Stade Vélodrome in Marseille.
Yeah. That stadium's crazy.
That's
awesome. The
atmosphere is
bonkers. So it'll be, and the England fans will be travelling and Wales fans will be travelling in a massive number. Mm. So, I can't wait for that.
Awesome.
But nothing really to talk about in the France game. Damien Penaud's really good at rugby. Who knew? Jalabert is outrageous. And the day after, I met Francois Tranduc at the train station.
Oh, yeah. Tell me about that, because you got a picture.
That's awesome.
I did a little video with him as well. He was cool. So, yeah, I just sat down on this little bench waiting for the trains. By the way, aren't French trains amazing? You love trains anyway.
I do. JB. Are you on the TGV?
Yeah.
Oh.
So good. Anyway, so I was sat just, we got let down to the platform and I was sat on a chair on the platform and I just did a double take of the guy next to me. And then I Googled just to double check it was him. I just got a photograph of him up. And then I messaged the WhatsApp group to say I'm sat next to Francois Tranduc. And then Hoppo, one of the guys on the group, gave me the Dutch courage to actually start a conversation with him. And
yeah.
You could not stop me starting a conversation with him.
I know. He was great. He loved it. But he reminded, I didn't realise, but I sort of said, Matthew Jalabert, like you hardly miss him, Roman Intermac. And he went, yeah, special. But he played with him last year. He was like, his last year of playing was, I'm assuming Tranduc's retired now.
Yeah, he was at Bordeaux.
Yeah, backing up Jalabert.
Yeah, so Tranduc's had so many clubs. He's done Toulon, he's done Racing, he started at Montpellier,
yeah.
I think, obviously... Has he done Lyon? I've got a feeling he might have done Lyon. Because everyone does Lyon. And then
he's
Bordeaux.
Montpellier, Toulon, Racing, Bordeaux. So pretty big clubs as well. And 66 caps for France over 10 years.
Not bad. Not bad at all.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's English like?
Perfect.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
How cool. And what else did you talk to him about? It wasn't just a 5-minute thing, surely.
It was just a 5-minute thing because we were getting on the train. The train was arriving.
Right. You didn't get on the train with him.
I didn't get on the train. No, because French trains are so well organised. You have your seat, and that's your seat. And he was on a different carriage.
But, so I had a really long conversation in the Dubai Sevens with Stephen Donald, and it was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely awesome, because we played against him.
Yeah, I remember you saying you played against him.
I recognised him, but I didn't realise who he was. I was like, do I know you? He goes, no, mate, you don't know me. I was like, what's your name? He goes, Stephen Donald. Earl. You're right, I don't know you, but I can.
I know of you.
Yeah. He's massive as well. He's a big, big boy. And who else on that team? Come on. Casey Lalala? Maybe. Anyway, doesn't really matter. Yeah.
That is cool. That's a really cool dude to meet.
Oh, he's great company as well. Good on the beers. Loves chatting rugby. Yeah, good.
Very exciting. In that French Italian game, I'm disappointed in Italy.
Yeah.
Just I kind of said, obviously wrongly now, that were they not in this group, I think they would have had a better chance, one of their best chances to make a quarter final. Probably wrong. The only thing that I'll kind of temper that with is they've got the second youngest squad in the tournament. Therefore, almost everyone will be around in 4 years' time, which...
Except for the coach, who wasn't very happy at all when he left.
Well, that's his last game. He's already been replaced. Mm. So, which never really helps, does it?
No.
Kieran Crowley being announced however many months ago that he will not be there any longer. It's never a good look prior to a tournament.
No.
So, yeah, hopefully over the next 4 years, they can keep this group, the majority of this group. They've got some supremely talented players. Guys like Capuozzo, like Brex, like Garbisi, like Lamaro and Canoni in the back row. They've got some talent, but they have just been poor. They've been so leaky. They're
garbage.
First phase defence has just been, yeah, garbage.
Yeah, it was an attitude thing. I mean, when you saw some of the tries they were letting in against, I think, was it the All Blacks I watched? It's just, yeah, it's embarrassing.
The All Blacks game was dreadful.
So, is this the only World Cup ever where Northern Hemisphere teams have topped every single group?
Yeah, imagine how...
Great question, but yes.
New
Zealand have never lost a pool game.
Match, yeah.
So, they have always topped one of the groups.
Yep.
So, yes, it will be.
Australia out, Wales top, England top, Ireland top, and France top.
Yeah. Imagine how... I could understand it, bearing in mind the draw. Imagine how salty... it'll be if it's a Northern Hemisphere lockout for the semi-finals.
Every chance, isn't there?
That would be pretty cool.
I mean, I think... Okay, let's just stop that now. Let's talk about next week's games, because they are supreme.
Is there any other game to touch on? We don't need to talk about New Zealand, Uruguay. We've done a tiny bit on France. We've touched on Wales, touched on England, talked about Ireland, talked about Japan. Tonga-Romania was... actually quite a good game.
Mm.
I thought it was going to be a walkover for Tonga when they went 21-0 or 21-3 up. But Romania came back and showed some positive. So I quite enjoyed it.
And it's good. We've already given it more coverage than anyone else will give that game.
Yes. So,
brilliant.
And that's enough for that. So yeah, let's talk about next weekend's games. So we've got Saturday, 14th of October, 5 o'clock kickoff in Marseille, where Tim Cocker will be our man on the ground. Wales versus Argentina.
Can't wait. And I like this way round. That's the one cool thing about Marseille. I get the evening kickoff live, and then I get to go to a bar and actually drink while I watch the second game.
Yeah.
And you're not trying to like get out somewhere at 11, because it's 9 p.m.
9 p.m.
French,
local time.
French
kickoffs.
Time. Yeah. So you're getting out.
Marseille's not so bad because there's places you can go and have a beer afterwards, and it's in town ish.
Okay.
Whereas
Stade de France
is
hell.
Like.
Hell. It is literally situated in the middle of hell.
Yeah. Nice was the same. Lyon's the same. I'm not going to miss that element of it.
Oh,
but I am going to miss being at those games.
You pointed this out this week, Tim, that none of the games are being held at a French rugby club. Except
no,
for, Toulouse, or is that not even in the rugby club in Toulouse?
I think the Toulouse one's at the football ground as well.
Wow.
Yeah, I may be wrong on that.
Because Toulouse play in the football ground occasionally.
I think so. I think it's Yeah, I think Toulouse RC, Toulouse play, or Toulousain, or play in the rugby in the football ground sometimes, but it's not actually their ground. So yeah, it's all football venues.
Which that's slightly disappointing that somewhere like La Rochelle.
Hang on, Stade de France is a rugby venue.
Yeah,
but no, club rugby venue.
Club rugby.
Yeah, who would? I guess if it was in England, it'd be the same.
Well, they did a bit in England. Like Gloucester had held a game.
Not a quarter.
No. Pool group stages.
Oh, right. Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, England was different. England was, like, spread it around a bit.
They had Brighton.
Yeah.
Brighton was one, wasn't it?
Brighton, which is not a rugby club ground, but it spread it out.
Yeah, they had football grounds. They had, like, Leicester City football ground was one of them, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
Yeah. And St James's Park they had as well.
And in one of the previous World
and
Cups.
And the Etihad.
Yeah, Etihad was. One of the previous World Cups, Otley, I think, held a game.
Did they?
In the early 90s.
Amazing.
Yeah.
It must be 91.
Yeah.
Well, Broughton Park did the whole of the Bingham Cup, which is the Gay World Cup. So that's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Well, no, Broughton Park hosted...
Bingham Cup?
No, when the World Cup was in England in 2015.
Oh, yeah, they hosted the...
They were the host venue for... Was it? I want to say Samoa.
It was somebody, and I'll tell you why I know, because we kept all of the training pads. So one of the perks of holding
might be Uruguay.
Yeah, it wasn't someone big, and who Dollars in Modern Park was a training camp for someone else.
Mm.
All Blacks.
Nice.
Sure, it was All Blacks. Anyway.
So I've just looked up the stadia for 2015. There were only two club rugby stadiums, Gloucester being one, and anyone tell me the other one?
Ooh, okay.
Not Harlequins.
No, it wouldn't be Harlequins because that was the Stoop. It's not going to be London.
It's not going to be the AJ Bell.
Possibly Bristol.
Not Bristol. Bristol.
Sandy Park.
Sandy Park, yeah.
Oh, good.
12,000. The others were... So there's MK, Stadium MK, Milton Keynes.
Ugh.
Brighton Community Stadium. Leicester City Stadium, the football, the Walkers Stadium, or whatever it's called now, King Power Stadium, which that seems like a bit of a missed trick.
Yeah, why didn't they go to Wasps?
Well, yeah, could have done that. Or was it even in 2015?
They might not have had it.
Yeah. Ellen Road in Leeds, Villa Park, Birmingham, the Etihad City of Manchester Stadium, St James's Park is quite cool. To have it there,
yeah.
Good ground right in the city centre.
So Exeter would be even better this time around. Was it 16,000 now?
Yeah, it's bigger. Millennium Stadium hosted a game. Olympic the three big ones in London, Wembley, Twickenham and the Olympic Stadium.
Well, you do, like, this is it now. You go to the local clubs for the plate competition.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, God, it gets even better, this plate competition. Because then you're getting revenue for the...
I'm more interested in the plate than I am the actual competition.
The plate now would be dynamite.
Yeah.
Plate would be awesome. One funny thing JB and I were talking about was, like, when it looked like Fiji might go out, like, just the visions of, like, the Aussie lads, like, putting down their beer, like, do I need to stop drinking this now? Am I going to be playing a game in 5 days' time?
They've done no conditioning. They've been on the hammer 5 days solid. I think they're probably snoring off a hangover today.
Yeah, 100%.
Weirdly, wouldn't that be exactly... If that had happened, I would think 5 days on the smash with each other, they'd be way better as a team than they were this World Cup.
It'd be probably one of those correlation causation things. You know, like everyone thinks the All Blacks win a World Cup because they swept the changing rooms and had nothing to do with the amazing players that they had. It'd be, oh yeah, we had 5 days on the piss, but what's his name? Will Skelton was back and...
Taniela Tupu.
Does that make a difference? Yeah, huge.
Yeah, but then they could do what the All Blacks did, which is the misinformation, disinformation, and they tell all the other teams to basically go on the smash.
Write a book.
The week before the knockout stages. Australia win every subsequent World Cup.
What was the policy for All Blacks? No dickheads. Yeah. They could write the sequels out, all dickheads. Yeah. All dickheads.
So, back to the quarterfinals.
No teetotalers would be the name of the Aussie book.
Yeah. So, our first game, Tim will be there, 5 o'clock, So 5 o'clock. So it's 4 o'clock.
5:45. Oh, is it four? Or is it on the hour?
So I don't know. What I'm looking at, this is on Wikipedia. This is going to be wrong. Let me go to
the tribe app.
I thought it was 4.
Yeah, well, that 5 o'clock French time would be 4 English time. BST.
World Cup. It is. Yeah, 5 p.m. kickoff French time. So,
yeah.
4 p.m.
4 p.m. Right. UK time. So, how do we see that one going?
So, I was reading some messages from a friend of ours who is currently in. He's currently in France. I'm done after the day. Lots of beer. But he said, lots of something and a lot of beer. What is that first word? And don't read it out if you think it's the word that I think it is. Is that a misspelling?
I think it must be a misspelling.
Give me a letter. Let's play like...
No.
P. I'll have a P.
No. There's no P in there.
I'm not playing this game.
Okay.
I'm gonna stop.
Yes, let's stop.
I see. I think Wales are favourites. Although I think this is a flip of a coin for me.
I think Wales are favourites.
I think before the tournament, if you'd have asked me, I'd say Argentina are going to smash them. But Wales, I've been so impressed with. There's two things. Obviously, Gatland is known, particularly in World Cups, knockout rugby, for being incredibly difficult to break down. But I've been so... And they will be that, because Wales are a system team and they always kind of turn it on in that situation. I've also been impressed with just how clinical they've been.
Mm.
Like in that Fiji game, Wales had to make 250 or so tackles. Fiji only had to make 70. And somehow Wales managed to score 4 tries from only kind of making Fiji do one quarter of the work almost. So
yeah, it's the ability to get your head kicked in. And this is obviously more than on the streets of Cardiff and the streets of Swansea. Like, the ability to take that punishment is really impressive and not be overawed by it, not be stressed by it. In fact, embrace it.
Yeah.
And I think that is a real, real strength. Because, you know, as I've pointed out many, many times, it is very hard to get a cohesive attack. But for really motivated really motivated young lads who are, you know, pretty tough, getting them to defend hard is not an issue.
Mm.
I mean, they all want to be there. They're all playing for their country. It's probably the easiest way to get a performance out of them.
So, yeah, give me Wales by 5 points.
Wales.
Cocker?
Wales.
Mm, full house for Wales. So, match 2, quarterfinal 2.
I've just got to mention, actually, I'm going to be spending the next few nights after... I'm heading back from Paris to Lyon to pick up the van to drive it to Marseille tomorrow. And tomorrow night, I will be staying at the little flat of a listener.
Oh,
who got in touch on email. Anton.
Awesome.
I completely forgot. I've got to mention, and I'll probably mention him again on a subsequent podcast, just because I've got to say thank you to Anton Javier.
Fantastic.
Who has a place in Marseille. Lovely place right by the beach, I have to say. And
sorry, Tim, go on, carry on.
And he saw the video that you haven't seen of me doing my little van life and said, mate, I've got a place that's empty. Why don't you have a nice shower, cook yourself some proper food.
Oh, how
work,
nice.
Work at a desk, which is like we've got some great listeners.
Ooh, a lovely bloke.
So I think he's got a place on Airbnb. I'll do a little video report from it. I'll do a podcast from it, but I think some England fans are in there for the weekend, but I've got the little midweek slot. So anyway, you can rely on me to have good Wi-Fi and somewhere to work to do the pod.
So I was doing my duty as a member of Beardmore & Co. Independent Financial Advisors, pensions, investments, that kind of thing. I was networking. I had this little slot to talk about what I was doing. And then someone else stood up and did their little slot. And afterwards I spoke to this guy because he said, yeah, one of the main sources of support I got was from my rugby club. So I assume that this guy is local. So I introduced myself. Guess where he is involved?
Is it a club?
Clearly not North Wales, then.
Not North Wales.
Sorry, North West. Not North West.
Not North West. Is it a club that...
Tim knows well.
Tim? Oh. It's not Ben Ryan's Newbury, is it?
It's so close to it. It's Newbury Blues.
Newbury Blues is like the amateur arm of Newbury Rugby Club.
Exactly. So it's like, oh, wow, that is exactly
what I mean.
Exactly what I said.
There is only the amateur arm of Newbury Rugby Club now. When Newbury was going up through the leagues, I was a Colton coming into it, and they had all the Vodafone money. They decided to kind of splinter that off so that the club was kept as the amateur club, and Newbury Blues began. I think they just call themselves Newbury Blues now. I think that's just the name now.
Ah, well, there you go. Met a guy from Newbury Blues.
Hometown club. Awesome.
And his son listens to Egg Chasers. So,
fantastic. Good man.
Wonderful. Okay, next semi.
Next quarter.
Quarter.
This is annoying because my favourite time of kickoff is the 8 p.m. Saturday night kickoff. I love that time of kickoff. This is 8 p.m. Central European time, which means it'll be 7 p.m. BST, which is,
not as good.
It's still okay. I'll be trying to wrestle two kids for half an hour or so.
Yeah, right.
So I'll probably...
You'll be like Dan Sheehan and Pierre Schoeman.
Oh, let's talk about that a second. Right.
get the WWE music.
The commentator said, oh, yeah, that's a hard man thing to do, to throw someone over a hoarding. I was like... Yes, it is, isn't it? Like, it's not a hard man thing. And like, if I said, I'm going to throw that guy go over the hoarding, that'd be bloody hard. That's so stupid.
It was just, it would, a lot of people said, oh, Pierre Schoeman was outrageous, he shouldn't have done that. But it could have been the other way around. Neither of them knew the hoarding was there.
Yeah, they didn't
know. Pierre Schoeman didn't push him over
as if it's like a cowardly thing to push someone over a hoarding. I think that's really hard. It's like, I'm going to put that guy in the bin. Like, if I actually get the guy in the bin, that's really tough.
Now that was I did observe that in comms. My favourite bit of commentary this weekend was pointed out by friend of the pod Lee French on our chat from friend of the pod Hugo Monnier, where in the France game, and now he said this twice. He said it in comms during the game, and then he doubled down on it after in the wrap up after the game. He said it like it was a profound statement. Well,
I can't wait for this.
France always start well. They score 25% of their points in the first 20 minutes of the game. So 25% of their points in 25% of the time. And you know what else? They score 75% of their points in 75% of
the
time.
That's unbelievable.
It's so...
I think I've got this nail, boys. Let me take it from here.
It's such an incredible, like, reading it out like it's profound.
But it's true, though. If you read anything out like it's profound...
Oh, I bet there's loads of people going, oh, yeah, France always start well.
Like, oh, yeah,
you know what? It's like, we've all said stupid stuff. We've talked into a microphone
That's
long enough.
That's amazing.
To not realise we've said something stupid.
Very true, very true.
You just nailed the point there, Phil, or JB, sorry. It's the confidence with which you do it. It's the same, like, I would never have the guts to wear the, like, safari suit that Hugo wears
true.
On the telly. But he just wears it with
pulls
confidence
it off. Pulls
and
it
pulls
off.
It off.
He looks great. Yeah. He does look great. Yes. He always looks great. I love that stat, though.
That stat is hilarious.
Anyway. Right. Ireland, New Zealand.
Ireland.
I think it is going to be Ireland, but I think New Zealand could cause an upset. Now, I want to see... So, there's a man... who I love because he's one of the best rugby players of the last 10 years. One of the most electric rugby players of the last 10 years. And he used to play for my beloved Canes. But I don't think he's playing particularly well. In Beauden Barrett, who I would drop to the bench and I would start DMAC.
At fullback?
At fullback, yeah. I'd keep Munger, keep Richie, keep most other things the same. But I think DMAC... he's just so dangerous right now.
I agree with that.
Big question, though, is can they live with the Ireland pack, and can they kind of just live with the Ireland grind, the phase after phase of fast, clinical ruck ball, where even five phases into the future, Ireland seem to know exactly what they are going to be doing and will find the edge.
Yeah.
They've got a man, as you pointed out before, Tim, they've got a man who might know a thing or two about that in their ranks, in Joe Schmidt.
Joe Schmidt, absolutely. That's a fascinating little subplot. One very quick question. Which one of Ireland's Kiwis would you put into a New Zealand 15? Jameson Gibson-Park, James Lowe, and Bundiaki would start, wouldn't he, for the All Blacks?
Yeah. I think Gibson Park.
Possibly James Lowe as well.
Wouldn't. James Lowe?
No, I don't see it.
Probably not.
He works for Ireland. Ireland are unusual, aren't they? You know, they get so much playmaking up Hansen.
Will Jordan and James Lowe seems like a good combo. Like Mark Talia, I think I'd start James Lowe over Mark Talia.
No, Mark Talia's class.
And also, I'd probably start Mark Talia as well.
But only for the All Blacks. I would definitely start James Lowe for Ireland.
Yeah.
The same way I wouldn't start Hansen for the All Blacks.
Yeah. Ireland, it's exactly the point you made before, Tim, that I'm now reiterating twice. But the fact that they've got the all-rounders, the fact that James Lowe can distribute, he can kick, he's got a hell of a boot.
Yeah.
And he can carry in heavy traffic with his big wide rump. It works the way it works.
Yeah.
But Bundy would probably be the one.
Yeah, because Bundy can add a completely different dimension, don't he?
Yeah.
He's allowed to play differently.
Even though... Jordy Barrett is probably not too much lighter than Bundiaki, but it's just totally different weight.
Yeah.
He's about 6 or 7 inches taller than Bundiaki, but about, probably a few kilograms lighter. So he uses his weight in a wildly different way to Bundiaki.
Yeah.
So yeah, he'd be the one.
Yeah. I think this could run into danger of being a runaway win for Ireland.
I don't think it will be.
And if they do this, they've got the semis in the bag, and then there's one more game to play.
Yeah.
And that's going to be heartbreaking for the world.
I'm already... the week hasn't even begun. I haven't even read a newspaper article on the quarterfinal, but I'm already, having read or heard nothing, I'm already fed up of all the talk of the quarterfinal curse. I just don't see that being any kind of factor on this group of players whatsoever.
If religion is real, right, religion or indeed, you know, demons and demonic forces and whatever it is that creates things like curses, surely they'll come to knock Ireland out in the quarterfinal. Mm. If there is a god, Ireland will be knocked out in the quarterfinal. Well,
wouldn't you love... I'm not
a believer, but I will be if they are knocked out.
These are two of your least favourite teams. So
my two teams.
You'd love both of these teams to lose.
Yeah.
Whereas these are two of my favourites. I do love both of these teams.
I just think it'd be more crushing for the Irish public to go out in the quarters. And then more... it'd be crushing for both of them. Who do I want to lose more? Like, South Africa and France are my two favourite teams.
Yeah.
And we're going to have to say goodbye to one of them.
We are.
It's heartbreaking.
Oh, that is heartbreaking. Heartbreaking on all four. Just saying goodbye to two of them. Great teams.
Yeah, well, if you could have South Africa and France go through to the semis, that'd be awesome. We're going to have one of the others. I still dislike Ireland intensely. But I do admire them. I do admire and respect them. Because
they're one hell of a team. They are. This Ireland team is some team.
I just love Peter Romani. So he might be He's getting very close to Courtney Law's level of love for me as a rugby player. Just his interview, his post-match interview, so he's just got 100 caps. He didn't smile once in the interview, and he referenced, I remember earlier the week the Scotland guys said they thought they'd worked us out, thought they were going to do us, blah, blah, blah. And that's, like, he's just got 100 caps, and his team have just wiped the floor with Scotland, and he's still, like...
fuming.
Managing to find some... Yeah, he's still fuming. I love that about him.
Did he go... And I'll say that. Did he take somebody else home? Or was he taken home in Monaco after being very drunk?
Who?
Who?
Peter Romani.
Not from what I remember.
Which one of them was... He was either... He might have carried someone home.
Sorry. So one of the players...
Yeah, I can't remember.
So I remember vividly.
Yeah, they carried a player home, or he was carried home.
All I remember about Peter Romani is him standing up on the table dancing.
On the table dancing.
Yeah, he was dancing with Sia Khaleesi on one of the tables, and Khaleesi had a few beers. Everyone had a few beers.
Yes, I can't remember. I can't remember who took him home though. It was either. In my mind, it's either Ugo
Wonya. I know who you're thinking of. You're thinking of Scotland back row Ryan Wilson.
No, that was the year before.
Who hadn't slept for about 3 days. And
Finn Russell, Ryan Wilson, and someone else were absolutely battered outside. But I think that was the year. But
no. Right. Ryan Wilson's the one you're thinking of, because he was on great form, but he hadn't slept in about 2 days because he'd been on a plane to get there from somewhere else. And
was this the Dallas? Hang on. No, we went to the. No, Phil didn't go to the first one.
Yeah, I missed the first one.
Yeah, so we did. No, you're thinking of the wrong one, Tim. Where all the Scotland one, all the Scotland boys were outside waiting for a taxi, and they are hammered. Absolutely hammered. That was the Ryan Wilson one. The year afterwards, Phil was there.
Yeah.
And we were downstairs rather than in the
Yeah. We were downstairs with the dance floor.
Yes.
I can't remember two separate ones now.
It's all the same thing.
Oh, the first one. So Phil wasn't there. We did all the interviews, didn't we, the first one? We met Eddie Jones and Bowden Barrett.
Yeah.
Did Eddie Jones.
And the second one was when we all three of us met Sia Khaleesi.
Yes.
Yes, that's right.
And Jamie
yes.
Roberts.
Yes.
And Doddy Weir.
Yes.
And a very, very miserable Stephen Moore.
You forget Blaine Scully.
Blaine Scully and a Pee Wee Deanty.
Yeah.
Who was very shortly after that banned for a long period of time.
Yeah. Well, he shouldn't have got into bloody Tim's party bus. It was inevitable. As soon as he got in the party bus, a ban was coming.
So we're going for Ireland then?
I would love Ireland to do this. I am back in Ireland.
And they've got New Zealand's number in recent matches, haven't they?
Yeah, I'm with Ireland.
Yeah. So then we go. Hang on a minute. This is an 8 o'clock because this is my time.
It is
time.
An 8 o'clock here. Yeah, 9 p.m. French time, 8 p.m. UK.
Yeah, sorry. I'm getting confused. I'm looking at two different websites. One that's giving me Central European and one's giving me my time. So, yes, that is 8 o'clock. That is good news. So, Sunday. 4 o'clock, British summer time, England versus Fiji, the rematch of the game from about, I don't know, 5 weeks ago where Fiji beat England. Is lightning going to strike twice? Is there going to be a second ever tier two, in inverted commas for those listening, because tiers don't really exist, but a tier two victory over England, that was England's first ever loss to a tier two team.
My feeling is, sadly not. I didn't see enough from Fiji to worry me for England, even though England themselves were awful.
I was going to say, they were dreadful.
Yeah.
If they both play like they did this weekend, they should just write off this quarterfinal and just put France and South Africa through.
Yeah, that would be exactly the right thing to do.
Make France play South Africa twice, 2 weeks on the bounce.
Neither team will play that poorly. I think Fiji agreed. Could well come through and win. I'm just going to optimistically say I think England win by 6.
England to have enough, yeah.
England, yeah. Oh my God.
Now, just on England, do you see England starting Ford and Farrell again? Because I think it probably will. It's the likely scenario. Do you think it'll be as bad as this week? Do you think it'll... Can they remake the 2019 World Cup semi-final performance is really the question, because that's what they're... I mean, that 10, 12, 13 was the pivotal point for an amazing performance against New Zealand in 2019.
Manu's rubbish. That's the first thing.
Defensively, he's really porous.
Yeah, defensively, he is rubbish. He had a couple of nice runs.
Yeah, he's just not very good. I mean, he's just not... Like, he had a couple of nice runs. He's living on past glories. He's getting paid for past glories in the Northwest now. So no is the answer. Farrell, Ford, maybe it works. The Ford and Farrell are not the most important part of Ford and Farrell. Manu's the most important part of Ford and Farrell, and he's rubbish, so no, it won't work. Ollie Lawrence, though, when he came on, looked like he could play.
Maybe that's the game plan.
I think he probably will stick with it, but I think there's a very good chance it'll be Farrell to Alangi Marchant.
I would prefer Ford, Lawrence Marchant to that.
I would go with Ford and Farrell,
mm-hmm.
unbelievably, but that's what I'm going to do. Then Lawrence, then Marchant. On the other wing, it can be whoever you want, because it doesn't make a difference. And I would go, just based on how they've played so far, Marcus Smith at fullback.
Now, I think the most likely scenario is Marcus Smith to come in onto fullback after 60 minutes if they're 7 points or more down.
Yeah,
Johnny. I'm not sure Marcus Smith at fullback against Fiji is a good idea.
but is Freddie Stewart?
Well, yeah.
True.
Fiji aren't going to be kicking that much, so you don't need the best aerial fullback in the world, according to some.
Yeah, I guess so. Oh, I don't know.
Who knows?
Is there another fullback option that I've missed? Is Anthony Watson?
Malin.
No, Watson's not. Malin's, Daly, or Arundel.
Ooh. There are a few options there.
Yeah.
Yeah, someone else.
Yeah.
He's going to persevere. He's going to stick with... Like, there'll be minor changes, but I'd be happy with wholesale changes. But behind the scrum, they're going to be rubbish if the forwards don't give them decent ball.
Yeah. Good point.
And now, the Fiji scrum did not look into any... They've only given away one scrum penalty for the World Cup.
That was a remarkable...
Amazing.
...stat.
And they looked very comfortable against England at Twickenham, so that's not going to be a problem for them.
So, yeah.
England's identity has always been really solid set piece and a back row that are gnarly, horrible, and just carry big. And we don't really have either of those things at the moment.
No.
Yeah, sadly not. So, we're all saying England, just.
Yeah.
And the fate that will meet them will be the winner of the Sunday 8 p.m. game in Stade de France, as it's written in front of me. Stade de France, France. It's France versus South Africa.
What a game. That game in Marseille last November was one of the great games.
And the game that has been the most exciting for me this tournament was Ireland versus South Africa because of the intensity. Now, I said this at the time, there was not the most metres made, there was not the most defenders beaten, there was not the most offloads, there was not even a huge amount of ball in play. It did not matter because the intensity was just dialed up to 11 for the whole match.
Ian Foster could not be more wrong.
100%. When
he said that running rugby is what people want, not stop, start stuff. And he was referring to the game the night before. No,
Like
Ireland, South Africa is exactly what I want.
And this will be that up another level, if that is even possible.
Well, I'm not sure, actually. I'm not sure if France can match Ireland's intensity. So if South Africa show up with the intensity that they showed against Ireland for the first 20 minutes, I think there's a good chance that South Africa will handily beat France.
Mm.
Which I don't like saying because I love France so much. France have got to score early and carry on scoring.
But I don't think... So you mentioned it before about France kind of going 10 minutes on, 10 minutes off. South Africa, they had big swathes of the game where they were that intensity and then Ireland came back into it. This will be... The pendulum has to swing because you can't... Like, South Africa can't keep that up for 80 minutes or 30 minutes of ball in play time.
I think that South Africa will do more damage in their intense periods to France than they did to Ireland.
A big blow for France is Paul Valemsa.
Huge blow.
Because Wauke and Fluant are superb players, but tight headlocks they are not.
No. Thinking about it, what matters this intense style of rugby? It's work rate. Now, I don't know how hard these guys worked. I don't see enough of them, and I don't know if Paul Wilhelmsy is just a big boy or he's a big boy that works incredibly hard.
I think he's both, yeah.
I mean,
unlike someone like Taufifa Nua or Vahamina, who are big boys, but they don't have that level of work rate.
It's like
Will Skelton pre-Saracens and post-Saracens.
Yes.
So Valemsa is more like a post-Saracens or peri-Saracens, mid-Saracens, Will Skelton.
Like it. Yeah. So I'm not sure if it's going to be a huge loss. I don't know. It'll be finally poised. I do know. I don't think France are quite there. I mean, they could beat anyone else in the world. I don't know if they can beat South Africa when South Africa are on their day and France are on their day.
Now, Tim, you've got access to the latest French rugby publications. Do they think that Dupont will play?
They think he will be available to play. Whether he plays or not, it's the surgeon that's going to make the final call. It's been 3 weeks. I suspect he'll be available. I think if I were them, I would put him on the bench. Just imagine 50 minutes, the noise in Paris when Dupont strips off his little warm-up vest and gets ready to come on. And Luku, Luku and Jalibert made me forget about Dupont and Untermack. They were brilliant.
Mm.
Admittedly, it's Italy.
Yep.
It's another level up, but they're very, very good players. And I don't know what the answer is. Do you just go for broke and start Dupont? Maybe they will. Having him back in any form.
I think you've got it right, Tim. And I'll tell you why you've got it right. Because the opposite to bringing him off the bench is starting him. And the opposite to bringing him off the bench is taking him off the field. And that would really deflate the stadium.
I think you've nailed it as well, Tim. I think the Luku Jalibert, obviously they played together at Bordeaux.
Yep.
So they've got that. It's not like you're just throwing kind of... they are both the second choice. They're both the backups, but they're backups with massive experience together. And that Dupont off the bench would be enormous. Like the crowds, obviously you've been there firsthand, Tim. The crowds for France in France sound incredible at the moment.
They're bonkers. It is insane.
That actually might make me think differently. That does make a material difference. I'm still saying it's South Africa.
Yeah. Now, I watched a pre-match interview before the Ireland game with I'm going to say this wrong. Mr. Stick.
That's how he's referred to. Anyway,
yes,
yeah, Mr. Stick.
Mr. Stick, and he was talking about he was asked about facing the number one team, and there'll be a lot of Irish support there, and all those things, and. Is a bit greasy at times. Like, can South Africa travel? And
who on earth are you talking about,
Mr. Stick?
Mr. Stick, one of their coaches.
I think it's
Muzwandili.
Muzwandili,
otherwise known
Stick.
As Wanky.
Wanky Stick, Mr. Stick. So he's the.
I have no idea who you were talking about then. Okay,
he is the South African backs coach.
Right. So yeah. Thank you for that,
Mr. Stick.
Wanky Stick.
Yes.
Okay.
He's talking about like South Africa's. Like how they're going to handle the pressure, and he just had this kind of like wry smile on his face. He's like, "We're very close. These boys travel the world together. They travel the world all of the time. They play in the cauldrons. Our boys are used to this. Like just do not worry about our boys.
Love it, and love it.
I think it's going to be awesome.
Go get them, lads.
These two, Pool A, Pool B quarters. The 2 8 o'clock, the two later kickoffs, are going to be absolute dynamite. Both days. I'm already excited about both of them.
So we've got Ireland going through. What are you saying, France?
I've not said anyone yet. Give me France.
Tim?
Give me France by five.
I do think France are going to edge it.
I don't.
I think South Africa are going to win.
I want France to win. I think South Africa will win.
Yeah, I think South Africa. Oh my goodness, I cannot wait. I can't wait to be back here doing this podcast. I might have had a couple of beers. You might have had a couple of beers, but we'll have to pod.
We will definitely pod. 10 p.m. next Sunday, we are podding.
Oh, wow.
After that. From that, we are saying... the only game we're not unanimous about is the France-South Africa. Because I'm saying France, you two are saying you think probably on balance South Africa,
but, yeah.
So we're saying that Wales will go through to play Ireland in quarterfinal one, which is on the Friday night, that is. Cool, that's good, Friday night game.
I was just thinking who I'd prefer to... it's just a choice between who I want to beat in the semi-final, and I think I'd probably prefer to beat France rather than beat South Africa, but either or.
So yeah, and then we've got England, we're saying England going through on balance to face South Africa, and that's the Saturday night 8 p.m. BST.
Wow.
And that, I mean, we might as well just do the preview now. It will then, in that scenario, it will be an Ireland-South Africa final. It will be a repeat of the previous game, the group pool B game, in which I'm then saying, even though I'm saying South Africa will lose to France this week, I'm saying South Africa will win the World Cup on our predictions.
Bingo. Well done. Now, before we go, I want some important information. Tim, in quite some detail, explain to me what your rugby watching schedule will be this weekend. How are we watching it? What's going to be special about this weekend for you to watch your rugby? And then you tell me yours, please, Phil.
So what's going to be special about...
Yeah, like what are you going to be doing? You're going to be in a pub? Which pub are you going to?
I'm going to be in the Marseille Stadium for the two early kickoffs. Mm-hmm. And I haven't worked out where I'm going to be, but I'm going to find somewhere close to the stadium where there's loads and loads of French fans for the Sunday night, and where there's, well, fans of just rugby generally for the Saturday night game.
Sounds,
I don't know where.
Glorious. Phil, what are you doing this weekend?
I'll probably be watching both games on the Saturday at home, because Claire's doing the Manchester half on Sunday morning.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be relatively sedate on Saturday. I'm then going to watch England with my old man. And then probably watch France, South Africa with you, JB.
Superb. So I'm, well, in that case, I'll be watching it with you.
Yes.
And then on Saturday, I am going, I think I'm going for brunch at 2 o'clock.
Hmm.
Then I'm going to watch...
Is that a brunch? Is that a luncheon to Lee?
Lee, yeah, Lee. Yeah, something like that.
Brinner. No. Dunch.
Yeah, something like that. So I'm going to do CrossFit in the morning, burn some calories.
Yes.
I might go out on the Friday night as well. I might just double up.
Treat yourself.
Yeah. I've worked very hard. I'm under my target weight. I can afford to do this now. a brunch of some... Maybe a Gaucho brunch.
Ooh, yeah.
That'd be
good fun.
Then we're going to head up to Northern Quarter with some CrossFit buddies, one of which does not watch rugby and will be educated to the nth degree on the nuances of the sport. I'm going to sit in a bar and order pints with the three or four of us over and over again until we cannot walk.
Sounds like heaven.
Yes.
Can we pencil in a... I'm just thinking about the podcasting schedule as well. I think we should get one or two short ones in this week when teams are announced and stuff like that, because these games are massive.
Thursday or Friday?
Thursday night.
And then possibly a just get together on, even if it's online from wherever we are, just a quick a Sunday morning reaction, and we can get just a sense of how much pain you're in, JB.
I'll be fine. I'm fine on hangover. I can do everything. Fully compos mentis.
So just a quick reaction to the Saturday night. Get some stories so that doesn't sully the Sunday night podcast when we're talking about France, South Africa.
Mm. Let's see how it goes. And no promises.
Mm.
Right, you are.
No promises. Excellent. Now, we have missed some other things, which I can't be bothered talking about now. But maybe we'll get together and talk about the RFU deal.
Yeah, you could do a spicy Sweeney Patreon extra.
Yep,
Patreon listeners, thank you for that. By the way,
we can talk about. Let me find out who's done this. I'd like to talk about Bletchley, who have decided to basically admit that all their players are thugs, from what I can tell, with a poster campaign, which is great.
I've not seen that.
Yeah, no refs, no player. Your passion is admired. Your support is needed, but so is your self control. Obviously, people. Obviously, Bletchley hate their fans, so that's an interesting one.
We should do this on another pod, because this is right at the end of an epic pod.
And then there's all the Northwest rugby results to catch up on.
Yes,
of course.
Yes.
So we can't not do these things. So we'll try 100%. And fit them in during the week.
Perfect.
Nice. Top stuff, lads.
Well done, everyone. Let the boys play.
Let the boys play.
Beautiful.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.